Hi, thanks. Hi, family. My name is Michaela. I'm an alcoholic. So my sobriety date is June 3rd, 2006. So I celebrated 8 years this June. And, you know, I just have to, I want to start with, like, to ground myself, just full disclosure, talk about my kind of challenging day. Really nothing in the grand scheme of things, but so I woke up this morning and I meditated, and then I just did like that adult kind of like not sexy paperwork that you have to do, contact the IRS, contact New York State about, you know, back taxes, contact insurance company about a bill that I can't afford to pay. And so I was on the phone dealing with, you know, bureaucracies left and right for 3 hours straight. And a couple of times when I felt myself, you know, just, you know, feeling reactionary, I paused and I took a deep breath, and then I, you know, the first time I was like, oh, I haven't eaten breakfast, let me take a break and go get something to eat. And imagine that, I felt better. So then I went back and made my next bureaucratic bullshit, you know, phone call, and I realized I had a headache and I hadn't had a cup of coffee. So then I got a cup of coffee. So these are things that I can do because I'm sober, right? I never at any moment did I want to be like, fuck this, I want a shot of tequila, you know, or like, if only I had a Klonopin. Like, didn't cross my mind. Actually, what crossed my mind is, all of these people, as bullshit as it is, all of these people are just doing their job, and a lot of us who are a part of bigger institutions just, like, we know that it's messed up, we know that it's difficult being on the other side of it, but we're just doing our jobs too. So I just had compassion for people the entire time. And I still, you know, had to pay money at the end of the day. But I got off the phone and I felt really good about myself. I felt really good. Like, I actually, you know, like, made a couple of people laugh, and we joked about how silly it is to deal with this stuff. So, anyway, and then I had a mole removed that my dermatologist, you know, said looked sketchy, and I had a panic attack. You know, it's like local anesthesia, no big deal. And I really hadn't thought about it, and I went in and I just started shaking, and whew, I just wasn't expecting it. And so I just like looked up at those, you know, the warm light that they put on you, and I was just like, took some deep breaths and asked for a guide, any guide of mine, to come in and just hold my hand through the process. And I shook the entire time, but I got through it. So in the grand scheme of things, like I said, this is like, really none of this is a big deal, but it was a day, you know, it was a day. And so never once was I like, oh, now I have to come and qualify. Like, I was like, this is awesome. This is the night that I want to be doing this. Because otherwise I would have like treated myself to like ice cream and maybe felt a little bit sorry for myself, you know? and just like being honest about that just really was grounding. So, thank you for listening. I, started drinking when I was 13 and smoking pot. Can we talk about drugs? Great. Yeah. Great. So I started smoking pot. I hated pot. I hated it. I just smoked it because, like, that's what was around. I grew up in Charlottesville, Virginia. And, you know, so it was a lot of, like, field parties and keg parties. And, I mean, I think about, I just had this memory of me, like, running down a street high as a kite, having just smoked a bowl and kissed a boy for the first time in my life at, 13. And we kissed behind Fry Spring Beach Club. None of that really means anything to you all unless you know where that place is, but it's, I don't know, I was fearless, you know, I didn't give a shit. I was free, and I was running down this, like, suburban highway, and it was all downhill from there. So I drank. I always hung out with older people, and, so I started doing things sooner than a lot of my friends, and so I didn't really have a lot of friends in my grade. I had, like, one or two friends in my grade, and then I would always have my older friends, and they all graduated, and I made new friends who also drank and smoked pot and, you know, birds of a feather. So when I was 16, I got a job in the restaurant business. And no child of mine will ever work in the restaurant business. Mark my words. It's just, like, no. Why was I allowed to work in the restaurant business? And so then, of course, I fell in love with cocaine at a very early age. And that was really my drug of choice. Like, who wanted to feel down and, like heavy, you know? Like, that's what pot did to me. It's like, I felt down, I felt heavy, I felt paranoid. I was, like, so busy trying to not act paranoid that I'm sure I was even more paranoid. But then I found cocaine, and it was just the best. And then it was the worst. Oh, God, it was the worst. But first it was the best for, you know, for a while, for 9 years. So, you know, in the meantime, I'll just say that I always had, a lover. I always, brought some kind of excitement to parties. Even if later on in life, like when I was in my, early 20s, I got sober when I was 25. When I was in my early 20s, I would walk into a bar and, like, people would be like, here comes drama. Oh, God, it got me. I just drank at those people, you know, that night and would just get wasted and be dramatic. And it was that cycle, right? It was like I didn't want to be here comes drama. I did not want to be that person. And as soon as, and I felt like that was the only person that I could be. So I was trying really hard to fight being that person, all the while believing that I was that person. And all it took was, like, one person to kind of hint at, you know, that part of me. And, you know, it just confirmed my biggest fear. And so what do you do with that as an alcoholic, as an addict? You don't say, maybe I should stop and think about that. I was just like, fuck you then I'll be that person, you know? I'm so grateful today that, like, there is no ounce of drama in me, like, none. None. And I never, like, that is a miracle. And I know how to have fun without, you know, like, using my body. I also thought that, like, my body was, like, the only tool that I had. And that's not true, you know. So I'm just kind of jumping around, but... So in the meantime, while I'm partying and hanging out with older people, and now I'm, like, hanging out really late night with restaurateurs, and I'm also the co-captain of my basketball team, captain of my track team, captain of my volleyball team, and the drum major of a 150-person marching band. So just for the record, I wasn't like good at basketball really. I just, you know, I was like of the age where they were like, let her be the captain. but otherwise I was an athlete. And I was a good student. So things are happening back there. Pay no mind. So I showed up. It was like during the week, I would show up to my classes. You know, I was a good student. I was a really good student. And I always wanted to be, you know, there are this group of girls, and I wanted so badly to be like them. And who they were, I saw them as these middle, upper class young women whose parents worked at the university, whose parents went to Ivy League schools. Therefore, they, you know, had discussions about like the political economy at dinner, and they could read like Time magazine and like understand what was happening. They always like smelled good and had like perfectly coiffed hair, and they weren't like, there was nothing real. They were plain Janes. I wanted to be a plain Jane. I wanted so badly to be a plain Jane. And I actually struggled with that up until yesterday. No, up until, like, you know, like, I was sober. You know, that's something that I struggled with. And, you know, I was never a plain Jane, and I never will be. And what the fuck does that mean anyway, you know? Yeah, I don't want to be anybody other than myself today. That is true. I'm doing all right, and I feel really damn good about myself today. And I felt consistently good about myself, especially in my 30s. Like, it's so cliche, but something really happens in your 30s. You all are like 17 years old, so enjoy your youth. I'm just kidding. Nobody hate me. Don't run away. But you all look really young. I'm very aware of how I'm 33 years old sitting in this room. It's great. So I got into a great college. I got a full scholarship. I should also just say that I grew up in AA. My mother just celebrated 27 years of sobriety last Thursday. And she also was very unavailable because men took the place of booze. And so when I got to a certain age, I was like, AA does not work, and this is like living proof. And, you know, I never saw my mom drunk, and that's a gift. That's a real gift. I certainly have a lot of work to do around that, but I have also softened up and really, I can't imagine, you know, being a mother and counting days with a five-year-old. Like, I can't. If ever I feel hard-shelled, that's the place where I go. I think about that, and I'm just like, coming back to that compassion for myself, compassion for other people who are just, we're all just doing the best that we can. So I got into a great college, and I drank through that. And again, like, I was around these wealthy, plain Janes. How did I continue to surround myself around them? But I did, and I felt, you know, I didn't feel smart enough. I went to an all-girls school, and, like, I just remember very clearly the women, you know, first day of class, looking over the syllabus that the professors handed out, and they're like, why don't you have Foucault on here, you know? And I was like, well, actually, I was like, oh, my God, they just challenged the professor, like, and, you know, and the then they ended up having a conversation. And I just sat in the back and was like, what the fuck is happening? Like, I'm a good student because I raised my hand and asked to go to the bathroom. Like, that's the school. I mean, not to simplify it that much, but, like, that's true. You know, that is a part of my educational history. If you raise your hand and ask to go to the bathroom, if you do your homework, then you're going to be okay. But I was surrounded by these critical thinkers, like, critical thinkers. And I did not feel like I belonged, like socioeconomically or, you know, intellectually. So there was that feeling of feeling like an outsider. And so I drank a lot and I partied a lot. And I learned a lot in hindsight. And I continued to, like, go in and out of relationships and in and out of drama. And I also will just interrupt myself and say that I never had a problem with God. Like, I have very clear memories of my mother and I went to a Unitarian church off and on. And, you know, I just always felt taken care of. I have this memory of me just kind of rocking myself in my room one day, feeling really distraught over my mom's boyfriend of the week and, like, how I just felt really sad. I was really sad. I was a really sad kid, really sad. And I just was rocking myself, and I just remember saying out loud, please, God, give me a sign that I'm going to be okay. And my cat at the time jumped up onto my lap and snuggled in. And that was all that I needed. And, like, always, I've always had, you know, I've always had moments of, and I don't even need, like, that's a great memory, but I just have always felt really connected to a higher power. So that's, like, what a gift to not come into the rooms of AA and struggle with that, because I know a lot of people do. And I get it. I mean, I get that. That hasn't been my experience. So I had many, many moments of being, you know, hungover and saying never again. You know, relationships ended, bridges burned. And just to fast forward to when I was 25, God, the drama. The short version is that I was working in yet another restaurant. When I graduated from college, I came back to my hometown, and the plan was to save up a lot of money and to travel and to take photographs. I mean, I feel like that's also a cliche story. Like, how many of us thought that that was going to be our dream? Or, like, be a dancer. That was the other thing. What happened? So I got involved in a really unhealthy relationship with the owner of the restaurant and ended up leaving because it was very abusive. So I got this, a math teacher at my high school. I ran into her on the street, and she was like, they're hiring for a kindergarten teacher's aide, and you should apply. So I did, and I got it. And it changed my life. It changed my life. how much time do I have? Really? Ugh. Okay. So there are three children, and they changed my life, and I realized that I couldn't show up for them, and And that was it for me. You know, there's a very specific moment where I looked into the eyes of one of them, and that was it. And so I knew where an AA meeting was because I grew up in those meetings. And I went. And in the meantime, I had applied to get to this master's program here in New York. And so I got accepted. I went to my first AA meeting, and I moved to New York 5 days later. And so I got sober in New York. And what a gift to get sober in New York fucking city. What a gift, you guys. Wow. Oh my gosh. Like, you want a meeting at midnight? You can go to a meeting at midnight. You want an all-women's meeting? You got an all-women's meeting, you know? Such a gift. So I didn't get a sponsor, I didn't get a sponsor right away. I was very shy. I'm trying to remember. I know that I felt like I saw people again in these groups, and I wanted to be a part of it, but I've always been really, I don't like to be a part of, I do much better like one-on-one than I do in groups, because groups are like easily translated into cliques in my mind, and cliques are like, cliques are basically like, that's how you can feel really awful about yourself and compare your insides to other people's outsides, blah, blah. So, you know, I made friends. I didn't fellowship, I fellowshipped very little. I got a sponsor when I had like anywhere between 30 and 60 days. And, you know, I went through the steps with her, and then I let her go, and I found a sponsor who was, I needed someone who was a little harder, and pushed me, and also had a stronger spiritual practice, and that's who I got. And then after 5 years with her, I was like, I need someone a little bit softer. Like, this is good. Went through the big book 2 pages at a time, did the steps, really thorough. And so I found someone who's a little softer. We can do that, you know? Like, nobody's the boss of us. We can do that. So where am I today? Today I am in a loving and healthy relationship with my very new fiancé as of 2 weeks ago. thank you. I jumped in, and I love this. P.S. With 2 minutes left, I jumped in and out of the closet, and now I'm completely out. So that's another. Woohoo. Thank you. I am in a doctoral program. I got my master's. I taught for 5 years for the Department of Ed. And I said, again, there's this institutional thing. I was just like, I love the kids. This institution is so fucked up. Like, I cannot be a part of it. And so now I'm getting my PhD in education. It's like where my heart is. And we're talking about starting a family. We are starting a family. And all I can say is, you know, this still feels so new to me. This, like, I wake up in the morning and I might have a list of things that are not sexy to do, but I do them, and I still, like, can enjoy the looks on kids' faces as I go outside, you know? I can say thank you to someone who takes my, you know, money, whether it's New York State for $800 or the barista for $3. You know, like, I have a really great life. There's nothing magical about it. Like, I work a really, really fucking good program because I have to, you know, because I want to. I want to keep growing, you know, I want to keep growing. I want to keep exploring. I want to keep learning more and more about myself. And that was not the case when I was out there, you know, I was like, I don't want to know anymore. What I know is that, like, I suck and I'm just going to surround myself with people who, like, either tell me, no, you don't suck. And then eventually they get sick of that, you know, or the people who are like, yep, you suck. And I believe them, you know, I don't believe those people who are like, no, you don't suck. And I believe those people. So today I don't need to look to other people to tell me that I don't suck. And that's a miracle. AA brought me to another 12-step program, so Al-Anon has been an integral part of my life as well. I have many sponsees, and it's great. It's great. I have no time to, like, think about, you know, to sit and wallow. I have 5 sponsees who sit and wallow that I have to remind them not to. I feel like I'm a really good person. I'm a good person. I show up, I say yes, and I surround myself with other people who show up and who want to say yes. And so that means that, like, my friend circle has kind of gotten smaller, but it's smaller in, like, a loving way, you know? Like, you make friends in AA, and then people change, and you take separate paths. And in the beginning, that was really hard for me. I lost really, really good friends. But then I made really good friends, and they're it's like a deeper level of intimacy that I once ran away from, and certainly never thought that I deserved, you know. So I'm so grateful. Thank you, Chris, for asking me to come. And thank you for listening, and I really look forward to hearing what you have to share. Thanks.